I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, November 23rd, 2019, and this is episode 42 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So episode 42. It just happens that this week I saw something that I shared on my Tumblr, which goes to the Footnotes newsletter, if you're subscribed to that. And it's about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And so if you're not familiar, the book by Douglas Adams has that the true meaning of the light of life, the universe, and everything is 42. And so you'll often see like memes about 42. And this clip, and I don't know if this is actually the truth or not, but it claims that since Douglas Adams was a computer nerd and knew about programming, that since an asterisk in most coding languages is a wild card. So it just means anything. It's like a catch-all. It can mean whatever you want it to mean. And the in ASCII, the code for the asterisk is 42. And so it's just saying that the true meaning of life is anything you want it to be, equaling 42, the asterisk. And so I thought it was cool. Not sure if it's true, but it makes sense from like a programming kind of perspective. I do like the idea of having stuff in your books that relates to coding. You know, since I am a web developer and I spend large portions of my time coding, I have a story cooking in the back of my head about a magic system based on code, and but it's very far from being a reality. Anyway, episode 42, I thought I would mark that with that coincidence. This week's best thing. There were a couple of things vying for contention for this week's best thing. I think up until yesterday, it would have been the movie Dolomite Is My Name on Netflix, and which is still wonderful. When it first came out a month or two ago, I wasn't super interested in seeing it. Not for any good reason. You know, like, I probably have seen Dolomite. You know, I went to film school and we did a whole blaxploitation thing. So I saw a lot of blaxploitation movies, but I just don't remember. They're all so insane that, and Dolomite is one of the more insane ones. But from the Old Dirty Bastard video, Baby, I Got Your Money, he's got a lot of clips from the movie. And so people, even if they hadn't seen the movie, they know a lot about it from that music video from the 90s, I guess, early 2000s, whenever that came out. Anyway, so my husband had watched it without me because I wasn't that interested in seeing it initially. And then I started seeing some interviews and just learning a little bit more about it. And then I was like, you know, I actually think I would like to see this. And he recommended it too. He was like, this is going to sound crazy, but it is the most heartwarming, hard R movie, like R-rated movie that I've ever seen. And so yeah, that is actually a really good way to put it. I was recommending it to my cousins and I was like, you know, it is extremely filthy, but extremely heartwarming and like life affirming, and you leave feeling good about the world and life. And you just kind of have to see the movie to understand how that makes sense. The other thing that I really enjoyed about it, and while I was watching, I noticed, you know, there's an early scene where you have Eddie Murphy, I'm going to call it Titus Andromedon because that was his name in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Titus Burgess, Mike Epps, and I don't know, the black guy from The Office. And so these four black men are at a diner and they're all friends and they're having this conversation. And one of them, you know, kind of gets mad at the other ones. I think Eddie Murphy gets mad at something someone is saying. And then his friend apologizes and they go on through it. And it was just like a really good portrayal of like black male friendships that you don't see. You have throughout this whole movie, you have this collaboration between, you know, it's a largely male cast. There's one outstanding female actor, but you see these black men working together to do something that is not illegal. There are very, very few instances. I can't really think of any that aren't like sitcoms or something where you have this many black men on screen together, working together in friendship, and they're not selling drugs and they're not hustling for, you know, something illegal. They're not doing any of that. It's all above board. They're hustling to make this man, Rudy Ray Moore, their friend's dream come true. And it is just amazing. It just shows a spotlight on how many of our stories are like about crime, you know, and about being poor and being disenfranchised and being marginalized. And this is not about that, even though it's like Dolemite, the movie, and the product and Rudy Monroe's comedy is all about like pimps and hoes and like just the least common denominator of, I guess what people would think is funny. But the movie, even though they're making a movie about that, and it's about a man whose comedy was about that sort of like ghetto life, I guess, or just like playing the dozens, like just kind of black culture in a certain way. The movie itself is just so like nice and like sweet and heartwarming. And if you haven't seen it already, I really do recommend it. And I'm glad that I decided to go ahead and watch it, because it's such a strange dichotomy that, you know, it works really well. It's not cheesy. Wesley Snipes is living his best life, chewing up all the scenery, stealing the show. Eddie Murphy was great. Everybody was great in it. So yeah, Dolemite Is My Name. Definitely check that one out. And then last night I watched the PBS Great Performances of Much Ado About Nothing. So it was an all-black version of Much Ado About Nothing that was filmed at Shakespeare in the Park in Central Park. And I saw something about it on Twitter a few weeks ago and just made a note in my calendar, and it popped up yesterday. I'm like, oh, let me go find it, because I couldn't pre-record it at the time because I didn't know it was called Great Performances. It wasn't called Much Ado About Nothing. Like, if you search your cable listings, it's called Great Performances, but it was fabulous. I don't generally spend my free time watching Shakespeare, but I did because it was an all-black cast and they had put it sort of in the current era, which just means that they were wearing current clothes. Like, it's this, you know, they didn't change the language at all. So semi-modernized, because they can only modernize so much. It was just hair, clothes, general attitude. It was really great too. It was great because, you know, people talk about representation sort of abstractly, like, oh yeah, it's good to see yourself in things. And, but when it actually happens, and for people who have this experience all the time, like who don't have any understanding of what it's like not to see yourself, I can imagine understanding it intellectually, but, like viscerally, like when you see an all black Shakespeare and it's very black, like they were singing modern songs, they were dancing, they were doing African dancing, they were doing like regular club dancing, and the actors interpreted, you know, the words in the story in a way that was obviously very culturally relevant and like very black. And then Danielle Brooks played Beatrice, and she was doing the most. She was a lot. She was bigger. And not like physically, but like acting bigger than everybody else was. And they're already a big, it's like an all black production, so everybody's big. But, and I wonder if she was doing too much. But regardless of that, her acting choices, she was fantastic. And she brought something really, really great to the role. And it's been a long time since I've seen Much Ado and or read it, like AP English class, however many years ago. But, there was one thing that I was really curious how they're going to deal with it. So it's like spoilers for Shakespeare, but it actually spoiling how this production deals with a certain thing. So if you plan to watch it and don't want to have any sort of spoilers, skip ahead like 1 minute and I'm going to spoil how they deal with this and then come back. Okay. So in Much Ado, we have Claudio and the hero, and Claudio falls in love with her, and on their wedding day, he stops the wedding because he's been tricked into believing that she had cheated on him. And he does it, he stops the wedding, and it's horrible, but he actually pushes her down, and she's crying, and he accuses her of cheating on him, and he's been tricked by the villain. And so I was like, how are they going to get around this? Like, you know they're going to get together at the end. And so they do, but this is an all-black cast, and like, I was wondering, are they going to do anything, or are they just going to be like, oh, it's Shakespeare, she just takes it back because she has to. But they didn't. And what happens is when she lifts up the veil at the end and he realizes she's still alive because he's been made to think that she died, you see her. I can't remember if she had any lines, but she punches him in the face and then she kisses him. And that is how she takes him back. She punches him in the face and it's great. Yeah, I highly recommend it. So I'm going to give Dolemite Is My Name this week's best thing with an honorable mention for Much Ado About Nothing on PBS. I also saw Last Christmas, the same day actually that I saw Dolemite, and it definitely didn't deserve one star in my opinion. I was still kind of meh about it. Like, I get what they were trying to do, and it was very cute, and it was heartwarming to a certain degree. It was, you know, a story about a woman finding herself, kind of. I had guessed the twist, and then there's a point at which you're like, oh, this is what they're doing. Okay, I've seen this movie before. You know, like, I don't know which one it is, but it seems like something I've seen before. So, and then the issue was, so many of the people in that movie were in different movies. Like, there were these two cops who were like, I'm going to say they're like Laurel and Hardy, even though I've never seen Laurel and Hardy. But they're kind of like bickering in their own little thing. There was this like German guy who falls in love with Michelle Yeoh. And they're in their own movie. Emma Thompson's in a completely different movie than everybody else, as far as I was concerned. So it was just like a lot of different things tonally that were happening, where they were trying to mix a lot of comedy in something that wasn't that funny. So overall, it was a meh for me. All right, a very long, drawn-out movie review segment. Writing update. Trying to get back on track after having some issues. I did try the technique that I talked about last week, wherein I haven't, you know, since I haven't been sitting, I haven't been feeling like writing. At the beginning of my writing session, I chose a short story. So I chose one from the Dark Matter anthology that has been on my shelf for almost 20 years. And Octavia Butler has a story in there. And so I haven't read it in almost 20 years. And so I opened the story and I started retyping it. And I type about 3 pages a day or so. So it's taking me forever to get through this short story. And I'm not done yet. But it really does work. And I am as surprised as anyone else. It's really interesting. So A, when you're retyping work is very different than rereading it because, you know, you're physically interacting with the work. And so I'm noticing all kinds of interesting things. I'm noticing her paragraphs and the lengths. Like, she has fairly long paragraphs. I tend to have short paragraphs. I have no idea, honestly, how paragraphs are supposed to happen. Like, I know it's the pacing and the length of the paragraph has to do with the pacing. You know, shorter paragraphs, people feels like you're reading faster. With longer paragraphs, things feel like they're going slower. I understand the theory of paragraphing, but in practice, and then, you know, English class, oh, a new idea, it's a new paragraph. My paragraphs are almost random. Like, not quite, but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like in looking at and kind of doing this deep study on this one short story and seeing how long her paragraphs are in this story, I feel like I'm learning something. She also uses a lot of M dashes, which I also use. There was a tweet about M dashes that I saw. It was kind of like, someone was like, oh, whenever you have an M dash, ask yourself whether or not it could be a period. And this girl retweeted, was like, no, I will not. And I was like, me neither. I love M dashes. I don't think they need to be periods. Like, a good M dash just really spices things up. And yeah, so looking at her word choice, like as I'm retyping it, I'm seeing her dialogue tags. With, you know, these are things I think about when I'm polishing. Am I using too many dialogue tags? Too few? Are people getting confused? I do a lot of, you know, interspersing actions in the dialogue. So I don't have to always say he said and she said, you know, have a line of dialogue and he sips his tea and then, you know, so you know who's talking. She seems to do that less, at least in the story. So all these kind of little tiny writerly things that you can really focus on when you're not necessarily reading the story just to read it, you're actually transcribing it and retyping every word, things pop out at you. So it's a great way not just to get into the mood of writing, because I'll follow that thought up in a second. It's a great way to analyze, like a master storyteller and their, you know, in detail with every little thing that they're doing. But the stated purpose of the activity is to get myself in the mood of writing, which it also does because they're not my words. I don't have the pressure of thinking them up, but I do have the body connection, the mind-body connection of typing. And so I'm just reading and typing. And then when I'm done my 3 pages or so, I find like a decent stopping place. I put a little sticky flag in the book and put it back on my shelf. And then I go into whatever writing I'm supposed to be doing for that day. And it has been working. When I sit down and push myself to do it, you know, it gets me in when I'm otherwise still a little bit unmotivated to sit at the writing desk and do the work. And so that is something, if you are, you know, a writer struggling at any point, give it a shot. I think it's probably best to do it with, you know, like a quote unquote great work or a great author that you admire, as opposed to just any old book. But I'm sure there's things to learn from just picking something randomly off the shelf and retyping it. So I've really been enjoying that, you know. And then the actual writing, I think I said last week I was going to try to plot this section that just doesn't exist in my first draft. So I'm writing all new things, and I didn't plot it. I didn't have the energy. So I've been pantsing it, you know, listening to Jeffy Kennedy's podcast about pantsing for NaNoWriMo and just trying to incorporate some of that. And it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I had several days of just pantsing, where just seeing where the story took me, just opening up my mind and typing, and anything goes on the page. And like that did work for most of the week. And then I did get to a point where I just need to know, like, I need more. And I sat down and I'm like, I've got nothing. Like I, there's a point when you can kind of do that and pants and write and flow and it feels right. Like it feels like something that even if it's not right, it's fixable and it's the bones, and maybe they're not quite the right bones. Maybe it's like, you know, you're an archaeologist putting back together a skeleton, and you dump out some bones in this free writing process, and then you really have to reorganize them and put the whole thing, like a puzzle, you know, put it back together. And there's sometimes when it's just like, no, I've done that for a couple of days, and now I need to clean it up and actually be focused, because if I continue doing it that way, I can tell I'd just be going down some random rabbit hole, which would be completely unusable. You know, the things I have, the way they are interesting, and interesting ideas have come to me that, you know, from that place, that unknowable creative source, you know, that when you just let it flow through you, does happen. And I acknowledge that. But I think there is a point at which it stops for me. And it was just like, I'm writing this sort of scavenger hunt situation, and I don't, you know, I've done some research and I have ideas, but I don't know what they're supposed to do. And pantsing gave me something, but not everything. And so I do have to stop and really look at what I have, see how much of it is usable. And within that, I know that there are going to be kernels that are going to lead me to the next thing. And I might not have had, you know, found those kernels, or I might have found them in a more difficult or roundabout way. So I can, you know, the subconscious, you know, I do believe everything is there in my subconscious. It's just a matter of pulling it through. So I do think now is the time to kind of look at what I've pulled through and see how, you know, just make that clay into something. And then I can move forward with that, as opposed to continuing to pants and just pulling things out of my ass that are not going to be useful at all. It's a delicate balance, I find. And I'm always trying to figure out how to make it, you know, how to make the scales match up. And one thing that's always overwhelmed me about writing in general are the infinite possibilities. And so, like, when you're staring at a blank page, I hate blank pages, I hate first drafts, because anything is possible. And so for me, plotting is a way to limit the possibilities. Like, you know, sometimes, like I said, it was great to have those possibilities, and I just was complete freedom for a short period of time, I can work with that. But now I'm looking at it and it's just like, it's still there. You know, even though what I've written, it hasn't closed the door on anything for me yet, if this makes sense. So plotting is a way to just take infinity and bring it down to something manageable, to like this box that I can work within. And now I can let my creativity really soar and fly within this box. And the box keeps me sane. And the box keeps me from just going down crazy trails and that I can't see the end of, and that might not have an end, and that might not connect back onto the main pathway that I need to be on. Focusing the creativity has a time too. And I have come to that time. But once again, the energy and I'm still in a kind of a struggling period. I'm a little bit low energy today because I just woke up from a nap it hasn't been that tough of a week. I had a funeral, a memorial service yesterday. My uncle passed away a few months ago. And so yesterday we had the memorial service. And so being in a highly emotionally charged environment with a lot of people has just been taxing on my introversion. And so I was very tired today. And there's always going to be some reason why I'm tired. There's always going to be something not quite right in the world, which is why I have to keep showing up, you know, to the writing desk and doing the work no matter what. It can't all be about if I can only write when I'm feeling great and inspired, then I won't have any books, you know, like I have to wait for whatever days those are. And that's just not reasonable for a professional writer on deadlines and who wants to produce and wants to, you know, do things and be reliable and just have books out regularly. So I really am working on, as the holidays are coming up and they're going to be difficult too, I just have to kind of get a handle on this and just put these processes into place that will help me get the work done. I did do the cover reveal of the new novella in my Facebook group. I meant to send it to my newsletter this week, which did not happen. So that might happen Monday. And I really wanted to have the pre-orders up, which are not up. And my excuse for not putting the pre-orders up was like, I don't have a blurb written. And my friend was like, in my mastermind, they were like, don't worry about the blurb. Just put like a tagline or a log line up. And so I did write a little paragraph that I had sent to the Facebook group when I did the cover reveal. But I'm still kind of ambivalent about a pre-order. Like I was all gung-ho for it. And I logged into Amazon. I was like, I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to do it on Drafted Digital. And then I looked and I was like, I really don't want to do a pre-order. Like I don't have to, obviously. I'm self-publishing this book and do whatever I want. I see the benefits of, you know, cover reveals with a pre-order. If anybody wants to buy it, they can right then. And then instant gratification. This is the world we live in. But I have angst because even though the draft of the novella is due to the editor December 13th, it's not done yet on November 23rd. And I just have like a reaction to putting up a pre-order when I don't have a clean draft of the book done. Like if there's no pre-order, I can push back the release date, which I don't think I've even really told anybody. I've said winter 2020, like February, you know, but I haven't announced an official date. And it'll be really hard for me to do that before I have a draft that I feel really good about. And I do not feel good about the draft at the moment. I do feel like December 13th, I'll feel good about it because it's short. It's 25 to 30,000 words. And I'm almost halfway through a draft I feel good about, but I'm still too close to everything. And I don't have the time to step away from it. For a few weeks so that I can come back fresh and really evaluate whether it's good. So I'm at the point where I'm deep in my head in both the novella and book four that I'm working on. And I'm at that point where everything sucks. Like everything I write is trash and sucks. And I know that I will get on the other side of that and have more clarity in the future. But right now, I don't have that clarity. And so I'm unreliable and I do not feel comfortable putting out the pre-order. So maybe I just won't. Maybe I'll just be like, here's the cover. It's coming and you can buy it when I put it out. Maybe I'm just not a pre-order person. Like, when it's on me and it's not on the publishing company, I know I can do it in a timely manner, but I don't feel good about it right now. So maybe I should just honor that and take the pressure off myself that I have put on myself to do a pre-order in the first place, just because I think it's a good idea, but I'm having issues with it. So in that vein, there was a great article from K.M. Weiland on helpingwritersbecomeauthors.com. about overcoming fear as a writer and embrace your profound courage. She says, sometimes we want to give up. Sometimes we do. Sometimes publishing one more book, even one more post, putting one more piece of ourselves out there to be judged seems too hard. Sometimes just the writing itself is too hard. The discipline of putting one word after another, the rawness of facing our own inadequacies on every page. But we keep writing. And then she says, I cannot choose to be fearless, but I can choose to be brave, and so can you. And, yeah, that's kind of, you know, not wanting to put a pre-order up is all about fear. It's fear that I won't finish on time, that if I do finish on time, it'll be bad, that even if I finish on time, it's not bad, it won't actually be good. I don't know. There's all these fears involved. And, you know, all of this is sharing pieces of ourselves with the world and facing the judgment. And even though I don't read reviews, reviews exist, and I put it out there for public consumption, and they do kind of trickle back, you know, anyway, even though I try not to read them. So lots of stuff going on, lots of being in my head and trying to get outside of my head in order to get things done. So that is basically where I'm at right now. I am getting ready for Thanksgiving. Not at my house. I think it's might have been my turn. We kind of, you know, the people who are able to have a lot of people in their home, in my family, rotate Thanksgiving. And this year, everyone was like, well, who's doing it? And I had done it 3 years ago when we first moved in to this house. But this year, I was just incapable of pulling myself together to host Thanksgiving. My mom is having Thanksgiving, and she actually just moved into her house. So I guess it's her turn, but she does Christmas Eve at her house, so. Regardless, I'm cooking some things to bring to my mom's house and thinking about that, a lot of things that I'm trying not to drop the ball on and just stay focused, even as right now I want to go back and take another nap. I took like an hour and a half nap today and I'm still tired. And that was probably too long. I think the sweet spot for naps is like 30 minutes, but 30 minutes isn't that enough for me to feel actually refreshed? Maybe I just need to go to bed. But it's, as I record this, it's 6 in the evening and I haven't written yet, which is terrible, I know. So I have to do something because I didn't write yesterday. And so I'm going to pull down that short story and start typing and get something down. And I know in the future I'm going to look back on the stuff that I'm writing now that doesn't feel quite right and not be able to tell it from the stuff that felt amazing when I was writing it. So that's the way of the beast. When you're in it, it is difficult. So hopefully I will have more energy and be in a different headspace the next time. The next time we speak. So yeah, I hope that you have a great week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts to support the show. It helps other people find it. My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. To check out more podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts. Have a great week and happy Thanksgiving.